You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Millennial Money. Today, we're going to be talking about fears brewing in the market because it's been too much of a euphoric rally for too many stocks, and it can't last forever, can it? And this is where we're going to start with just that. Graham, Jeremy, Andre, what's going on out there?
Gosh, I feel like first we got to talk about maybe Rivian. That seems to be the talk of the town right now. What is it, $175 a share? And I remember, I think we were talking actually last week, it was Andre and I, and both of us were saying, we're going to wait a little bit before jumping in. You know, usually the first week is iffy. And a lot of people had the expectation it was going to go like the Coinbase fiasco, where it's going to run up for like an hour and then boom, it's going to tank. Didn't do that. As soon as you think it's going to do something, it's automatically going to do the opposite. So if you think it's going to drop, nah, it's going to double. So
what we said in the last week's podcast too, is like, it's going to go the exact opposite of what we just said. And that's exactly what it did.
Yep. Pretty much. So yeah. So do you think it could reach 200? Can we see a $200 price target?
I don't know, but this video is sponsored by Motley Fool. No, I'm just kidding. It's not.
This video is sponsored by Lucid. Make sure to get your Lucid vehicle down below in the description. I'm kidding.
Yeah, jeez. I mean, I think there's a good chance it can hit $200, but I think it's sitting on toothpicks of fundamentals. It's sitting on a lot of hope. And Rivian's actually timed this perfectly because if you think about it, I feel like a lot of traders are afraid of trading Tesla right now because all it takes is Elon swiping up and there goes 5% and your day trade got screwed. So you may as well go day trade Rivian.
Yeah, I call Rivian the cryptocurrency of stocks. It has no revenue, but it has $150 billion valuation. Like, who knew, you know?
It's sick just, burn.
Okay. I've been saving that one all day, Andre. Okay.
I've been practicing it.
Like, I'm going to use this on Millennial Money tonight. I can't wait. But in all seriousness, guys, it's a little insane. And I feel like it's one of those, the higher it goes, the harder the fall is going to be. I mean, to be completely honest, I mean, it's just everybody's on Wall Street, I guess, thinks every EV company is going to be the next Tesla. And what have we learned from basically every EV company? They're not Tesla, and almost every single one falls 50% plus, you know? And so I feel like Rivian's just the next candidate to, you know, maybe the crash starts tomorrow. Maybe it starts next week. Maybe it starts next month. But I feel like we all know it's going to come down. It's going to come down.
Yeah. As you know, it's funny. As a good example of this, I think it was like $5,000 into Lordstown Motors. Right. I'm going to tell you how much I'm down on that investment because it's, I think this is my worst investment that I've ever made in the market. Yeah. Okay. So, wait a second. No, I only put $2,000 in this. Thank God. Yeah, okay.
Good.
Wait, no, actually, crap. No, it's worse than I thought. I only have $2,000 left.
Put $100,000 in.
So get this. So I put $8,000 in Lordstown Motors as just like a fun sort of, I'm going to see what happens in this. You never know. It's just a fun gamble. It's down 79%.
Oh my God. Dude, that's insane.
79%. Now, I'm so thankful. Like obviously, I put a part of my portfolio in just fun, risky stuff because it's just, why not? You never know. So in relation to everything else, I mean, it's a drop in the bucket. But yeah, this one, good example. They don't always go as planned.
Graham, you know what you could have bought with that? You could have bought an NFT for that, and you could have been up.
You know, I could have got so many iced coffees for that. I understand.
I actually bought a Mickey partner statue from the VV platform when they launched on Friday. This is like their biggest drop, right? It's the Disney iconic. Let me see if you could see it on camera. It's Disney, Walt Disney and Mickey, right? And this thing retailed for $330 when it dropped on Friday. Sold out in under a second. Okay, so I'm driving. This is like, I don't know, I'm going to say 5 hours after the drop. I look, it's going for $3,000 in the secondhand market. $3,000. I buy in because I'm like, I know this thing's going to be worth a lot. So I just buy it for $3,000. 10 minutes later. 10 minutes later, I look in the market and it is worth close to $7,000. So in like a few minutes, it just shoots up. Let me see where it's at right now. Okay, so the floor price right now, the cheapest one you can get in at right now is $6,800.
Wow.
What's special about those? Why those?
Why those? Because this is the first official drop that Disney's doing. I mean, this is not their first NFT, but this is their most iconic one. And as far as what it does, it spins. Kevin's like, oh my God. You can actually put inside of your, showroom and show it off to your friends like you would any other NFT, like a Bored Ape or anything else. Clearly, this is the best investment right now.
clearly, Andre.
Not as good as TTCF, Jeremy. But
nothing's beating that one. That makes cryptocurrencies look boring, Andre.
Okay, hold on. Before we get into the NFT thing, I saw your video on TTCF, Jeremy, and I did not understand. Okay, I guessed in your Instagram, so you took a poll whether the stock was going to go up or down during earnings. I guessed down. I guessed right, probably for the wrong reasons. But so it leaked. The earnings leaked. How is that possible?
Yeah, so this is complicated, Andre, and you could be wrong because it's really depending upon what happens with TTCF tomorrow if it's actually down. But it's complicated. So
debating.
This is
not what I'm debating. Okay, let's get to the bottom of this. Should we buy TTCF? Okay. Because this is really cool.
Yeah, this is a dramatic situation. I think everybody deserves an explanation. So TTCF, first off, they reschedule their earnings, which is like a huge deal. They reschedule it last week. So then it gets rescheduled to today. Then all of a sudden, about an hour before the market closes, stock tanks. Brian texts me and all of a sudden he's like, hey, look at this report that's coming out. It's all over message boards and whatnot. Somehow they put it on their website or something and it got leaked. And so the numbers and everything, 58.8 mil, 44% revenue growth, everything was in there while the market was still open. And so it was a dramatic situation. And then we go into after hours trading. The press release actually comes out. Stock opens up or opens down 4 or 5%. Then by the end of the conference call, it's up 1%. So needless to say, Tattoo Chef might overtake Tesla for the most dramatic stock in the stock market. It's a drama show. I've never been part of something like this. I can tell you that, where a company rescheduled earnings and then the earnings come out in the middle of the trading day. In 12 plus years of doing this, never happened to me.
I didn't follow that. Were the earnings good or bad, or did they just meet?
It depends on what you – they missed the growth rate. But it's still 44% growth year over year and 56% branded revenue growth year over year. Now, the shorts are going to say that's not enough. They need to grow 60% plus. As a shareholder, I wish they would have done 50% plus, but still 56% branded revenue growth is nothing to sneeze at. It's kind of like, it'd be like Tesla missing by a little bit and being like, well, I guess I'm going to sell my Tesla position because they missed earnings or something like that, right? So anyways, it's a dramatic situation. It's a sideshow, but the fundamentals are still intact. So that's all I have to
Wait,
say.
So tomorrow, are we going to see a sell-off or are we going to see a spike? I feel like it should be a sell-off technically because they
No, I actually feel like we're more likely to see a spike because now the boogeyman's out of the market. The boogeyman was the shorts are like they're going to report a disastrous number. There's going to be some – they were cooking the books. That's what they were in. Basically, it was an immaterial difference. And so that was what the shorts were saying. They're cooking the books over there. They're going to have a disastrous earnings. Now that boogeyman's out, and now it's just back to the fundamentals and the long-term story there over the next 5-10 years. So it was all just a sideshow. And all for what? For the stock to go back to 16, which is what we always talk about on this channel. It goes from 16 to 20-something, 20-something to 16, and back and forth. It's a drama show, man. And it's going to
I mean, if it was going to move, wouldn't it have just been doing that in after hours trading?
It depends. A lot of retail folks like to buy in the open markets. A lot don't even have after hours trading, and a lot don't like to mess with after hours. So I think what happened in the trading day is you actually had – there's not a ton of big money in the stock because it's like a one-something billion-dollar market cap. But I think some of the big money saw what happened there, sold off, and then traders obviously sold off because they're like, oh, they didn't beat earnings, so the stock's going to tank. So they all got out. They all sold during the trading day. And so that's why the stock also went down 4 or 5%. It finished down like 2.75%. And tomorrow, we'll get to see what happens. Tomorrow, in my opinion, the price action will be driven by retail investors, whether those folks want to sell out or buy in. I don't think big money's affecting it. I don't think, honestly, trader money's affecting it. I think it's going to be folks like myself that will affect the stock price tomorrow. So It's a fun drama show. I will say that it's given a little look to the market.
What do you think, Kevin? I want to hear your perspective.
No. Let's move on to the next subject.
No, Jeremy. I don't know. We want to hear what Kevin has to say. He's holding back. You could see by his smile here. There's some feelings between you two.
Wow. It's hey. You know, Jeremy's probably right.
Kevin, how much did I pay you to say that? What's your Venmo? Yeah, I mean,
look, I mean, I hope it does well for you. I don't like it. You know, it's interesting because I was talking to some people about this, and it's the narrative has evolved a little bit. Maybe you can shed some color on it, or shed some light on it. You know, it was always that, oh, Tantri Chef is adding so many SKUs. They're going to have so much growth. It's going to be an easy 60 million plus quarter, which it wasn't, came in at, you know, 58. And the marketing expenses, which people are like, oh, we don't even need marketing. The sales are going to be great. We're just going to add all these SKUs and got so many loyal buyers. The sales are going to come in so much higher. And then the marketing comes in higher, way higher than expected, leading the operating costs to be what, like double what we were, the losses to be double what we were expecting, 8.2 million versus a 4 million loss. I think the marketing was a little over $3 million. And now it's like the narrative has been spun a little bit of like, oh, well, they advertised, and because they advertised, they did well. And it's like, well, wait a minute, they were supposed to do well without all the advertising. And so I've personally believed, and it was the reason I sold, that their marketing's not good. And so I am very nervous about their marketing, and it's just not a stock I want to hang out with while they test how to market. So that's just been my thesis. Again, like I hope it works, but I see a little bit of a narrative shift in that, oh, now the justifications for the marketing and I don't think the last thing you want to do is try to justify the marketing on it.
Yeah, and that's fair, Kevin. And it's also fair that you don't want to take part in the stock because I don't think it's a stock for everybody. As far as me, the way I personally look at it, I don't care. I just care about the revenue growth and that's it. And I honestly, I turn a blind eye to all the other drama margins. I'm doing the same exact thing I did on Tesla. And maybe it comes back to bite me, right? And maybe the stock doesn't work out. I don't care about what they spend on marketing. I don't care about the margins. I don't even care about the losses in the short term. In a few years, I will care about that. I promise you that. That will matter to me. But in the short term, I care about revenue growth. I want them growing as fast as possible, getting in as many stores as possible, as many SKUs as possible. And I'll be honest, I think a lot of these stores are understaffed. And I think their resets are taking longer than expected. I'm going into Smith stores, which is owned by Kroger, and I'm still waiting on those freezer resets. Like, it's taken forever. I think these stores are understaffed. Target, yeah. Inventory is extremely low. I went to my local Target. It's a disaster zone. The whole freezer section. I'm not just talking about Tattooed Chef. I'm serious. It looks like, you know, people thought frozen food was going to run out of inventory or something. So I don't know what's going on. But needless to say, I think there's more factors at play. And I think the rollouts are taking a little longer. But regardless, it's 56% branded revenue growth. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you miss a number here. I mean, I've been in Tesla stock for years. They've missed numbers plenty of times. And Kevin, you know this. It's not like Tesla beats numbers every time. They'll miss numbers on profit loss. They'll miss numbers on margin over the past 4 or 5 years. They miss revenue numbers. They miss delivery numbers. They miss production numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, it's a smaller company that's just now growing. And I mean, they've got a lot of experience. I mean, what they were founded in, like, what, 03, 04, whatever, doing white labeled food manufacturing. So we know they have the experience. We know they can do it. And it makes sense that now they're transitioning away from all the private labeling is what they were doing to just doing their own brand. So it's great you're seeing that growth. You know, I just hope they can get profitable for you. I mean, I know you said you don't care about the margin, but their margins declined. And maybe that's because food prices have gone up, you know, ingredient costs have gone up, inflation, shipping, and all that good stuff. Maybe it's part of a diversified portfolio to have some food in there, but it's not for me.
Yeah, I respect that, Kevin. It's definitely, you know, it doesn't have to be a stock for everyone. I don't think honestly any growth stock is for everybody. You have to really, like, you have to not only see it, but you have to truly believe in it. And it's hard to talk people through if you don't really believe in it, right? Because you're going to get too caught up in the short term. Andre with Bitcoin. You know what I mean? Like, you talk to me all the time about Bitcoin this, Bitcoin that, and you know, it's hard for me to get involved with that because I look at it and I'm like, it has this $1 trillion valuation on it. And
I'm laughing because I see Jeremy and Kevin argue about things, and then Jeremy's like, well, you know, you gotta be a believer. What are you talking about? What about Bitcoin?
That's the part of investing. Honestly, that's the part of investing.
I'm not diversifying religions, all right?
Yeah. You can't get everybody to buy everything unless it's Tesla stock. In that case, everybody can buy it. But
this is
you can see, Andre, it's tough, man. So I don't know, Graham, what do you think about all this? This circus.
You know what? Kevin brought up a really interesting point that what could be leading to some of the lower revenue with this is just increased cost of shipping and labor and manufacturing. I don't know how much that's kind of skewing things. And if that lasts for another 2 years, I mean, that could put a major dent in that. That's something I didn't consider. I don't know how much that plays into it, if anything. So,
yeah, I don't think it plays much into the long-term story. I think it's all just distractions in the short term, man. I don't know. I don't want to keep comparing it to Tesla because then people are like, Tesla and Tattooed Chef aren't the same. It's like, no kidding. But you ought to understand these growth stocks, they go through the same exact things. Tesla, it was always something, something, something. It was always, oh, they missed this number. They missed that number. Their margin's not where it should be. You know, it was always something, right, for the last several years. And finally, people have gotten out of the way with Tesla. Oh, it was EV credits. Oh, Tesla's just benefiting from EV credits, right? It was always something constantly. And if you paid attention to that stock, and I feel like Tattooed Chef's kind of in that same category. And it's just, if you're not on board with it, it's just, you can't be on board with it. And speaking about on board, Andre, I'm up to $275 worth of Bitcoin now.
Ooh, baller. That's great. $275. That's progress. I'm going to take a dollar a day.
Wait a second, Jeremy. Is that why Bitcoin's going down right now? Did you buy?
Ever since I got in Bitcoin, it has gone down. The sellers are attacking.
That's the thing. It's like you buy, like, for all of us, we have like a significant amount of money in Bitcoin, and then you buy like $50 worth and tank the entire market.
You guys said you wanted me to buy, so I bought. Well, I didn't technically buy. I got it given to me. Yeah, I got it for free. I got it for free, and ever since then, it's just going down. So Bitcoin 20K is coming, guys. So Andre, you'll get ready to load up, baby.
Thank you. I have faith.
Everybody said as soon as I have some Bitcoin, that's the top of the market, man. There's nobody left to buy in at that point. So Definitely. But Andre, in all seriousness, what's going on with Bitcoin? Because I heard there's something huge going on here where there's Bitcoin, maybe I'm wrong, Bitcoin could be potentially even a competitor to Ethereum now with some of the newest moves. Is there anything to that, or is that just crazy talk? And what's going on with Bitcoin?
Oh, you're talking about the Taproot upgrade?
Yes.
No, it's not going to be quite a competitor to Ethereum. It's just going to enable Bitcoin to do some extra features. Kevin actually did a really good job on the price movement of like the futures interest, and that's a big part of why there's a big sell-off. But then I like looked at the market. I'm like, is that really like the real reason why it's going down? Because I feel like that's kind of more of like a symptom of why Bitcoin's going down. And I feel like there's maybe another underlying reason that triggered that sell-off. And then that's what I was trying to figure out. I don't know if I have the right answer, but I'm kind of exploring the idea. I don't know if you've been following the trial that's been going on in Florida over a man who claims to be the creator of Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto. And I don't want to like mention his name. It's someone I've been following since 2017. And he's kind of been like a boogeyman within the crypto community who's just basically said like he's Satoshi. And what's interesting about that is if we find the creator of Bitcoin, that would be the most devastating thing to its price.
I agree.
That would be horrible. Horrible. So that's the last thing we want to do.
But Andre, let's say this guy has been saying he's Satoshi. What would be his motive? If my thinking is that if he was actually the creator, he has no incentive whatsoever to say that he's. I mean, that's his baby. I mean, that's his legacy for as long as he's alive. Why would he want to ruin that mystery? It's better to take that one to his grave.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think one of the reasons why somebody might want to take the credit is just because, like, who wouldn't? If you're somebody who created something that significant, wouldn't you want history to remember you for that? Like, that's a huge ego play for somebody who's as smart as the person would have been to create something like that. So if I'm going to go down in history, I want everyone to know I created that. But what's interesting about that whole lawsuit is so by large, the crypto community does not think that that guy is Satoshi. Like, they all denounce him and they're like, that this is not Satoshi. This guy's a fraud, whatever, right? Because he's gotten himself into this ego play of like, oh, I'm Satoshi. There's a family that's claiming that, well, if you're Satoshi worked very closely with a gentleman by the name of Dave Kleiman. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Kleiman. And what's interesting about that is there's a million Bitcoin at stake. So they're fighting over who gets to control a million Bitcoins, which is worth over like $66 billion right now. That would put that person on the 20th richest people in the world, right between the Walton family, the people that own Walmart. So, I mean, it's huge. So what's interesting that is that if he does turn out to be a fraud, and if that case goes against him, then technically he would owe a million Bitcoin, which is something he might not even have access to if he's not actually the real Satoshi. Like, imagine that. You claim to be Satoshi, even if you're not. So the judge is like, okay, you're Satoshi, but you lose. Like, you need to share the Bitcoin. What's that guy going to do? It's a really interesting thing. It's a really interesting scenario that's going on. Does that mean?
I like how Graham just vanished.
I don't know what happened. My internet just cut out, and then it randomly came back. I don't know.
That's how it was crazy. I was like, did I just disappear, or was that Graham? Yeah. But anyway, it's a really crazy story. I'm actually making a video about that on Friday, I think, which is it goes really deep into that story. But yeah, it's crazy. I think that's part of the reason why we've seen a sell-off, at least what started it.
Wow. Okay. Because it's fallen quite a bit. You know, for crypto, it's small, but I mean, like 7% in a day is a lot. You think it's because of that, huh?
Well, I think that's partly what started that fear, and then the sell-off just kind of, you know, compounded into itself. But I don't know if you guys remember, but in February when Coinbase went public, they released a document to the SEC, and in that document, they outlined a bunch of risk factors for, you know, if you're going to invest in Coinbase. Here are some risks, and they cited things like Bitcoin and Ethereum being a part of their a huge part of their business model. That's how they make money. And if Bitcoin and Ethereum's reputation goes down, then they're going to make a lot less money. And in one of those reasons that they cited for for it, you know, as a risk to investors was the unmasking or the revealing of the identity of who Satoshi Nakamoto is. So wow. It's a huge, huge liability that even Coinbase is recognizing as one of the biggest detractors of Bitcoin that could potentially send it really, really crashing down.
So that's interesting. I never thought about this. This is really the first week I've started hearing about some of this, and I haven't really paid much attention to it. So finding out who created Bitcoin is actually really bad, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really misunderstanding perhaps why.
Yeah. So one of the reasons why new cryptocurrencies aren't taking off, like if you think about it, is like what's one of the first things we ask when we look at like a Floki or Shiba Inu? We look at the team, right? And we're like, why are they anonymous? And why don't they share their identity? And who are they? What are their intentions? And we question the characters behind the technology. And one of the things that Bitcoin had going for it in 2008 and 2009 is that the creator managed somehow to be anonymous. And I think that's almost impossible to do in today's world of social media. And the reason that it's so important to stay anonymous is that Bitcoin is immortal in that way. It's not attached to any character. It's just an idea. And ideas are like bulletproof, right? They can't be really destroyed. They can't be killed. But if you put a face and a person to something, a person that's flawed, is not perfect, then you could open up a wormhole of attack vectors where the government or a corporation that could create a narrative about, well, this guy is a scammer and you shouldn't invest in this. So I'm like, there's so many ways to connect the person to the technology that you make that idea mortal and it can be destroyed. And so I think one of the reasons why no crypto could really ever catch up to Bitcoin in today's world is partially because it is almost impossible to do something to that magnitude and stay anonymous. And Bitcoin managed to do it. It was like the last one or the first one that did it. And it was the only one, really. So that's why we don't want to know.
I love that, Andre. Now, do you think that's reason for the price action we've seen recently, or is that completely disconnected?
Well, Kevin did a really great breakdown of he looked at like the technical analysis of the futures market and the futures open interest. So maybe he could talk about that. But I just looked at like maybe the underlying reason what triggered that. And I think part of what is triggering that is the fear that if the courts rule that this guy happens to be Satoshi, or maybe we find out something we didn't before. I think some of the insiders are paying attention to that court case and some of the whales, and maybe they're, you know, selling, or maybe I don't know what they're doing exactly behind the scenes, but Kevin can speak about the technical analysis.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you're getting a bunch of liquidations because as the price goes down, like, you know, the price ran up to 69,000 and everybody's like, oh, it's going to go to 100,000 this year. And I'm, you know, I've regularly said, I don't know about 100K this year. You know, maybe that's like a 2022 event, but whatever. That was the belief that, oh my gosh, it's going to 100K. So you had a lot of people load up on leverage when this started running to 67,000, 68,000, 69,000 new all-time highs. So as soon as it started rotating down a little bit, you got a large amount of liquidations, which helped push the price down further. Now that we've broken under 60K, you know, we're sitting at 59.7, a lot of folks are questioning, okay, like, where do we go from here? And I think going to what you're saying, Andre, anytime you have uncertainty in the stock market, you get a sell-off. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a rumor or if it's actual news or if it's just fear of potential news. Uncertainty means price goes down. And you've got the entire crypto market, for some reason, selling off. And it could be because, you know, it got a little overextended and it's just a healthy pullback. Maybe it's a combination of that with the liquidations and this level of uncertainty, which I think is very likely the case.
Yeah. And remember, this guy is supposedly has access to 1 million Bitcoin. Now, there's like, well, how many Bitcoin are there? Like 16? I don't know. Like out of 18. The total 8. Amount, 18.8. But is that the amount in circulation, that including the ones that we've lost? I don't know. Either way,
circulating supply 18.8, max supply 21. That's at least just what CoinMarketCap says right now.
I don't even know if that's accurate. I feel like there's a lot more bitcoins that were lost throughout the years than just the three. But I don't, maybe that's right. Either way, one out of 18 is a significant amount. I mean, can you imagine a person with access to 1 million Bitcoin flooding the market with that? Like, what kind of damage that could cause? That's insane. So that's a huge uncertainty risk that Kevin just mentioned.
So what you're saying is sell Bitcoin.
Yes, so I could buy it.
Wait, so you don't care about the uncertainty?
I don't. I think the crypto market's always got a lot of like fear, uncertainty, and doubt. People pump these kinds of fears, and it always returns. So I'm in a way, I'm hoping something bad happens so I could buy the dip, but I don't want it to happen.
Did you guys see CoffeeZilla's video by chance called Tether Has Lost Its Mind? Did about 4 or 5 days ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So anyways, he basically a video he does on Tether and how Tether has exploded over the past year or so. And he kind of, if you watch that video, he kind of attributes Bitcoin's massive rise here to Tether. And also goes on to basically kind of talk about how it's a joke because Bitcoin is supposed to be that thing that's like, you know, doesn't inflate or anything like that, right? But really, Tether is just forcing Bitcoin up like crazy, and it's basically doing the same thing that the Fed does, just behind the scenes, right? Where it's not right in front of your face, it's more behind the scenes. So I don't know. I would love to have heard your guys' opinion on that, especially the three of you all own a lot of Bitcoin, and what the defense is for that, if there is any defense for that.
Yeah, that's a deep rabbit hole. I watched the video, but I know that Tether recently bought a bunch of, or at least printed a bunch of Tether recently, kind of in line with what's going on in Florida, the court case. But I haven't been really closely following their rate of however many they're printing. But you're right in that Tether is a huge, huge boogeyman in this space. But so far, I guess, I don't know why they haven't been punished for it. They're just allowed to exist and do that, which again is a huge boogeyman.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of that is already known at this point. A lot of people hear Tether and like, yeah, we already know about that. We've been hearing about this for years. It's something that eventually is going to happen. It hasn't happened yet. It's in the back of our minds, but we're not going to worry about it. That just seems like what people's thought process is.
Well, yeah. I understand that, but I would love to hear the debate or the conversation about whether Tether is really pumping up the price of Bitcoin or not. I think that's the main concern. Right.
I don't think anyone would ever come to Tether's defense. Let's put it that way. I don't think anyone's going to be like, well, I mean, unless maybe someone from Tether would love to chime in and tell us. But I don't think anyone in the crypto space would ever come and defend what they're doing. Yeah.
The Tether fears have been known for a while and talked about many, many times. It's not just CoffeeZilla, although I respect his work. I mean, we've talked about this before as early as January and March and February of this year. The stablecoin risk is very much one, and that's what Tether is. It's how many times is the money being lent out? You know, there's no regulation. There's no transparency. Where are the assets? Are they actually backed fully? I think that's always just going to be this built-in risk with crypto. And I think probably that is one of the biggest risks that I see for crypto is that you get regulation that shines light on what's actually happening. And all of a sudden you see that one Tether has actually been turned into 30 or 40 or 50 Bitcoin. Well, that's going to be a problem because it doesn't take much to take that kind of over-leveraged market and make it collapse. So that is a very serious risk. That's, in my opinion, probably the biggest risk. I don't know how much of a risk this revealing of the founder of Bitcoin is. I feel like they would almost become a little bit more of just like a founder of Ethereum kind of person. And they probably respect the institution enough. I mean, I know, Andre, you're shaking your head. I don't know. I don't know. You'd hope that. Obviously there's some level of risk there, but I do think the stablecoin risk is larger.
Yeah. And the reason I was shaking my head is because Vitalik Buterin is relatively a normal person by normal people standards go, but the character
that man's an alien. First off, I don't think he's human, but go on.
Yeah. Extremely smart. I tried to read his papers. I read one sentence and I'm like, what did I just read? I have to like reread it again. I couldn't understand a word he was saying, but Satoshi on the other hand, or at least the person who claims to be Satoshi is very different character that I don't think most people would want necessarily associated with Bitcoin or any crypto. So that's why it's a big risk.
Got it. That makes sense.
So what are you guys buying out there? A little Ethereum? Ethereum was down, what was it, 9% last night or so?
Yeah, I think 4,000 now, right? Did it drop below 4?
No, it's back to 4149, but I think it was at, did it drop below 4 yesterday, guys? Or let's see.
I don't think it did. Not below.
I don't
four.
Know that we fell okay. under four. Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, are you going to buy, Jeremy, now that we have a nice dip and you've been exposed?
Me? Come on, man.
Are you buying more than Chef?
Do you want Ethereum to crash? You tell me what cryptocurrency you want to crash, and I can crash it. It's nothing for me, guys. So, you know, whatever you want, just tell me and I'll make it
Jeremy's
happen.
Just going to put a dollar in it, and he's going to wipe like $500 million off the market cap.
Yeah. He's going to get gifted a dollar of Ethereum and wipe $500 million.
Even better.
Oh, wow.
So are you guys interested in buying the dip there? Because it was at just 4,700 recently. I don't know if you guys are just consistently buying, or you want to buy heavier if it dips more, or what are you guys thinking about?
No, I bought a little bit earlier, like when it was 62, but I'm just buying consistently. So if it drops to 50, it doesn't matter. If it drops to 30, I don't care. If it goes
to Ethereum specifically, Graham.
Oh, Ethereum specifically. I bought Ethereum probably a few days ago, but I'm only buying chunks at a time. Like I don't put in more than the equivalent of like one Ethereum at a time. So I just do that at a regular basis. So I'm not dumping like 50K in Ethereum. I'm doing like $4,000 to $5,000 at a time every few days consistently. That's about it.
Invest only what you're not willing to lose.
Yeah, nice. No, what about you, Kevin? I know you bought a decent chunk of Bitcoin. When was it? The other weekend after
Yeah,
Elon
a couple
Musk
weekends
tweet.
Ago. Yeah, yeah, it did great. I bought it at like 60, 61, like 3 yeah. or something like that, 61.5. And then it ran to 69,000, you know, and it was just basically straight up from when I had bought. But now it's just been straight down since then. And so now those you know, 17 Bitcoin or whatever are down, I don't know, $1,500 each or $2,000 each, whatever. Whatever. It's part of the game.
So what's your plan with Bitcoin, Kevin? It's a decent amount. I know in the past you've sold off and you bought it back cheaper and you've increased your position. Is your plan on this one just to hold it for a few years and see what happens?
No. I'll trade it. You know, I'm not gonna sell it when it's in a pain mode, but I'll probably sell it in a few months, you know, get through some of the drama now. And if we hit like 75,000, 77,000 or something like that, I'd probably sell it then.
Did you guys see JP Morgan's predictions, or I guess analysis, that Bitcoin's still gonna double? Or it's gonna outperform every other asset class?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That was interesting. It's so funny to see the guy that like completely poo-pooed on Bitcoin.
In fairness, still seems like he believes the same things. He still calls it worthless, but he's like, even though it's worthless, based on all these factors, it could go to this price. Even though it's not worth this price, it doesn't mean it won't trade at that. I think that's been the going narrative throughout almost everything in this market, is that, all right, it's not worth this price, but if everyone buys it and they don't sell it, and based on this market cap and the available float, it can keep going up even higher.
How do you figure they're doing an analysis on something they think is worthless? Like, I mean, those two don't marry. Like, they don't go hand in hand. If you think something is worthless, how are you able to make future predictions on it? Like,
probably just trend analysis and charting. That's all I could expect.
Because you know, like a stock to flow and just like a volatile,
I mean, maybe
volume,
maybe, or just draw Fibonacci and go, you know. Seriously,
these dots connect. Look, they form a pattern.
There you go.
They're busy drawing dinosaurs out of the charts and be like, this is a Stegosaurus. And if we look back at other Stegosauruses, they go up 20%, and oh, we got a giraffe over here, so that's bullish. So I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. This is all right. Okay, so we're all pretty long investors.
Yeah, because that's what I was trying to get to with you guys. Do you buy heavier if the dip's bigger? Because I know I do that with stocks. Like, the heavier it falls, the more heavy I will buy. You know, so let's say I was a believer in Ethereum. I'm one of those guys that if it fell to 3K tomorrow, I'm going to put way more in than if it fell to 4K, right? So I'm just curious if you guys do that with crypto. It sounds like, Graham, you don't. Andre, Kevin, if it's a dramatic move down, do you do extra if it's down big? And also, do you guys trade any bit of Bitcoin, Ethereum at all? Or is it only I'm holding this for the next 10 years?
That's like four questions.
Remember them all.
Okay, got it. All right. Kevin, you go first.
Oh, great. Yeah, well, I definitely trade it. Sure. I mean, I buy more heavily when prices go down. That's, you know, my thing right now is I'm a little nervous about stocks in general and just even in crypto market. I'm really not going to be nervous until probably the second half of next year. So I'm not so worried about crypto, but I think the stock rally is insane. And I'd like to start building up some cash again for the next dip. Who knows? Maybe that'll be in December when we start getting the drama with the budget deficit and, you know, a government shutdown and the debt ceiling again. So I think there'll definitely be another opportunity. I don't think we need to be paying some of the prices that we're paying on a lot of different stocks right now.
Okay, so yeah, and by the way, my main question was, if a crypto falls more, do you buy extra? Like, do you go heavy? Like, if Ethereum's down 20% tomorrow, do you load the boat? Or is it just, I buy the same amount all the time, just so you guys know.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of buying in larger batches when I think there's a good technical reason to do so. So I'll buy a large batch if I think it's about to run. Like I bought 17 Bitcoin because I thought it was about to run at 61, you know, three or whenever I bought it. It did. Unfortunately, it also evaporated, you know, a week later. Absolutely. Yeah, I'll definitely trade it like that. Yes.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Yeah, so I don't trade it, but you want to go
interrupt, Graham? We know you don't trade it, Graham. We already know your answer. Andre, we need to hear your answer.
No, I was going to say I don't trade it either. And I just dollar cost average. So I'm kind of like Graham in that way. I just dollar cost average like 1,000 a day into it. But if there's something significant, like $30,000 to $40,000, you know, we drop to $40,000 or something ridiculous where it's like, oh my God, the world's falling apart. I will load the boat like crazy. But I don't typically buy the little dips. And I'm with Kevin that I think second half or at least the first half of next year is like the summertime. It's going to peak, and that's when we're going to see the real flash in the pan. It's going to be crazy.
Wow. I want to ask you guys a question about that in just a moment, but first we got to say thank you to everybody that's in the Millennial Money Squad. We appreciate you guys. Thanks for everybody that always smashes a thumbs up and a subscribe to the channel and joins us every Tuesday night. We appreciate you guys. Much love as always. Thank you. So I'm curious, guys. So if you look back at the 2017 run in Bitcoin and the crypto market, it seemed to have fallen apart. I think it was, what was it, January? It was either December or January, right? And so why wouldn't we have that same type of thing happen now where things maybe peak again, December, January, fall into the new year? Why are you guys so worried about the second half? And you bring up the second half, because I don't think a lot of people understand that. And that means me. I don't understand it. So
me, it's inflation. That's, I think, when inflation rotates down, finally, it's not going to be a great catalyst for crypto because people are parking money in crypto because they're fearful of inflation. And so if that catalyst goes away, then it becomes maybe less necessary to hedge against inflation because we might not have inflation.
Yeah, pretty much. And then July is when we'll fully taper out, which by July, we shouldn't be making jokes about Jerome Powell, whoever the Fed's going to be in 8 months or whatever it's going to be. So, yeah, by then we should have a better idea if supply chains are easing, if inflation's still high. But I seem to think that it's still going to be high. It's going to be higher than we think, but I don't know.
Graham, do you think anybody really buys Bitcoin or Ethereum because of fears of inflation?
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
Really?
Oh, gosh. I would say part of my reasoning for buying it is that I love the fact that it's a new asset class that I feel like would be a good hedge against inflation. Just the fact that there's 21 million of them, they're not making any more of them, definitely gives me a little bit of comfort knowing that they can't just devalue it the next day, even though it could be extremely volatile and there's nothing stopping it from dropping 80%. But I think long term, I would believe in that more than I would the current financial system.
Okay. I definitely want you guys, I need the three of you guys to watch that CoffeeZilla video, because I think all three of you are still missing this point that about Tether. You're addressing points about Tether, but you're not really addressing the elephant in the room that I'm trying to get to, and I'm not smart enough to explain it. Mm-hmm. So just watch that video. Let's talk about it next week, because I think it's worth addressing and coming back to, because you guys keep talking about, there's only 21 million Bitcoin ever. But you have something behind the scenes that's basically just doing what the Fed does. And anyways, we'll come back to that. I don't want to beat a dead horse there.
But that doesn't add more Bitcoin into circulation. That would absolutely put buying pressure, increasing the price, but that wouldn't add more to the circulation.
Right. True, but I don't know. It's complicated. I don't know. We'll come back to that. Andre.
I wanted to ask you something about the debt ceiling. So we're going to talk about it again soon, I guess, right? And do you think that the debt ceiling will be held over people's heads as far as like passing the Build Back Better plan? Like, do you think some people are going to try to pass in there with the debt ceiling? They'll just sneak it in there as a way to pass that? Or do you think it'll pass on its own?
Oh, absolutely together, because you're going to do a budget reconciliation deal to get the Build Back Better plan through. What a perfect way to deal with the budget by also extending the debt ceiling and dealing with the government's budget, hence budget reconciliation. So it's the perfect bill to do it with. They just got to get their act together and get the bill done.
Isn't that kind of messed up that like we hold such huge issues hostage over over such big problems?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
it's
always going to be something. It's always going to be something because politics is divided because we have so many issues, but then, nobody wants to hurt their own pocketbook either. It's kind of like, in California, we know we have these massive housing issues and people are like, yeah, we need more housing. We should have more affordable housing. And then as soon as it turns into like, okay, cool, we're building some new apartments over here. But he's like, oh, hell no, not in my backyard, It's, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, it doesn't matter, politics or local government or whatever. If it even slightly inconveniences somebody, it's a no vote from them.
Right. That's crazy. Man,
that's always gonna be something, but I don't worry about it. Like, you shouldn't worry about it either. I mean, they always end up passing the budget and extending the debt ceiling. If anything, I think it'd make a nice buy the dip opportunity. And I really think with how frothy things are right now in the market, whether it's Rivian or it's Lucid with some of these stupid valuations that we're seeing now, or which we did expect Lucid to run, in fairness. Okay, I've been saying all year long, people are like, well, when's Lucid going to run? I'm like, when they deliver cars. Now they're delivering cars and it's running, right? But it's also, we're in this sort of euphoric cycle where just like Etsy's almost $300, Enphase, $250. Some of these numbers are just insane right now. And so I kind of hope they sell off a bit because I'm just sad. I'm looking at the prices like I can't buy these things.
Yeah. And you think that the debt ceiling conversation is going to send the stock market a little bit more fearful?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, because it'll come. We'll have multiple things converging at once. We'll have government shutdown, a debt ceiling, sales data from Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which, might not be the best. It could be the best, but it might not be, right? So we'll know that. But so that, you know, that could create uncertainty if it doesn't come in as great as expected. You know, on top of that, you've got this whole thing with, is J-Pow going to get replaced? Which we should know that this week. So we'll see.
Actually, somebody just said in the chat, I just read it, Nathan said, if that U.S., Jeremy, this is kind of for you, if that the Tether situation becomes a real issue in a crash, what a bounce we might see if it doesn't actually become, like take the opposite side. If Tether, maybe we do find out that it's backed by assets or whatever it is, what do you think that would happen to the price?
Yeah, I mean, that would be probably a bullish catalyst. Yeah, it's still not exactly the point, though. That's a part. It's not, I think everybody understands, and I think we've talked about it, like around Tether and is it backed by anything and those sorts of things. There's another issue. Like I said, I don't want to come, you know, beat that dead horse. But yeah, I think you bring up a good point, Kevin, around how holiday sales are, because inflation. You know, I think it's killing the middle class right now. I think it's doing some damage. And, you know, I was looking at consumer prices for just a lot of basic items. And my gosh, the rises some of these items have had recently is extraordinary. So,
yeah, but people have more money than ever. And that's the weird thing. You know, obviously, people? we want to be empathetic to, you know, maybe folks making less than $40,000 as a household income. But a lot of people who have careers, who are even remotely exposed to, they own their own home, or they're exposed to stocks, or they've seen their wages go up. A lot of people have more money, even though that purchasing power might be lower in certain cases, like if you're buying a used car or whatever. I think a lot of people have a lot more money than what we've seen. And you could see this in the household savings rate, the personal savings rate. We went through this just a couple weeks ago. We might be surprised. I mean, so far, numbers are looking really, really good. I mean, we saw consumer optimism's up. Retail sales this morning were up. They were up in China as well. We were expecting them to come down yesterday. They actually went up, which was a big U-turn in expectations. And there's this really interesting conversation. This former executive, I've mentioned this a couple times now, so sorry if it sounds redundant. There's this former executive. He went on CNBC for Macy's, former executive of Macy's. And he's like, you know, everybody's saying they're going to move up their purchases because they want to make sure they get their stuff in time and they don't have any holiday Christmas shopping delays. So they're going to buy stuff earlier and maybe we'll see less buying for Black Friday. And he laughed at that thesis because he's like, as a retail executive, that's not true. Every time consumers say that, they end up buying the first time when they say that, and then they buy the second time anyway. They end up buying for Black Friday and the holiday anyway. So they just end up spending twice as much money, thinking they were doing something smart. In reality, they're just spending more money. And to me, as an investor, it's just music to my ears. It's like, please, please, spend yourselves into oblivion. What difference does it make to us? I encourage people not to spend, but, you know, my reach is not all consumers, so what do I care?
Yeah. I don't know, guys. I'm a little worried, man. I mean, your money velocity is horrible. We talked about that in last week's episode, right? You know, listen to some of these numbers. This is out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. October of this year versus October of last year. Eggs are up 29%. Chuck roast is up 28%. Bacon's up 27%. Ground beef's up 17%. Sugar's up 12.5%. Boneless chicken's up 9%.
Talk about coffee, Jeremy. Talk about coffee. We have to raise. No, actually, we're not raising our coffee prices, but now we're basically our margins are so thin because they've raised the price of our coffee.
Yeah, I think coffee.
It went up about 15 to 20% for coffee.
Yeah, coffee here is 6.1%.
What's up?
Graham, are you going to raise prices? Are you going to pass the cost off to consumers?
We're not going to raise prices quite yet, but we have to. At some point, I think we want to try to carry it out through at the end of the year. We're basically like, before we were making about $1, maybe $2 per order, depending on what people would order. And then that would just be reinvested back through like marketing and whatnot. But now we're basically going to be at nothing. So we sell something, we make nothing. So now it's just the cost of customer acquisition to keep growing for the rest of the year. And then probably the beginning of the year, like we have to raise the price actually like $1 or $2 just because for us, the cost went up. So it just, it is what it is.
So
I mean, there's no other way to do it. because otherwise you run an unprofitable business that doesn't make sense to operate at all.
Oh, that's what I do, Graham.
Anyway. Oh, yeah, sorry. Jim, I'll ask you all about that.
Yeah, I am the expert on running unprofitable businesses. All of them are unprofitable. So, anywho, I don't know, guys. On all seriousness, I'm worried about the middle class. I think it's a subject we're going to have to pay a lot of attention to in 22. Anybody that makes less than 100K, that's a group I'm worried about. And,
it sounds empathetic, but let's be real. So $500 for I don't know, a person or maybe a younger couple in groceries, 30%, it's $150 extra bucks. Family spending $1,500 on groceries, an extra 30%, that's $450. It's a lot, don't get me wrong, but it's not the end of the world. For some people, again, like you're under $40,000-$50,000. Yeah, that hurts. That price rate, you know, that sort of income threshold, that hurts. But those aren't our real big consumers anyway. You know, the big consumers, in my opinion, are going to be those households that have discretionary income. Those are going to be the people with household incomes over $70,000 a year, where this extra $450 a month, it's a hurt, but they're still spending money because they've got the wealth effect. Real estate prices are going up for those that own real estate. Those that don't, yeah, there are a lot of people getting squeezed out. But I think the other people with the wealth effect, they're spending more money to make up for the people who aren't. Just my belief. And my heart goes out to the people who are getting screwed and pinched by these prices. But I think net-net, our economy is much stronger as a whole. And again, unfortunately, to their demise.
Yeah, I disagree.
Quick question for you guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you guys think inflation is going to go up or down next year?
Well, that's a big subject. That's a whole.
We got to look at the national debt clock. That's what we got to do.
That's what we're talking about, baby. But in all seriousness, man, if you're making under 100K, that's who drives this whole economy. That's who drives Apple's earnings. That's who drives everybody's earnings.
We got to separate that, right? So there's under 100K and then there's under 40K, right? It's like the people under 40K. It sucks. Those are the people who are getting killed with inflation, especially the people who are in credit card debt. Credit card debt, paycheck to paycheck, which in fairness, a lot of people are paycheck to paycheck, right? But a lot of folks who are paycheck to paycheck aren't shopping for discretionary goods all the time because they're just trying to get by. This is why when stimulus checks came out, it's like here, all of a sudden we just see, you know, discretionary spending skyrocket and all that money gets spent because those folks are unable to buy when they previously aren't. But I don't know that they're driving how much of core spending they're driving. I suppose that would be an interesting statistic to dive into. So we'll have to punt that one and come back after doing some research on it. But regarding your question of inflation, I don't think there's any question that at some point, inflation will go down. I don't know exactly when that's going to be, but it will be down. I hope that it's by the middle of next year. I was hoping it would be by the end of this year. I was wrong about the end of this year. Things just lasted a lot longer.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Your video about the implosion of the Fed, which I really liked, that you said in the 40s, right? Was it 47, 46, 47, 48? 49 maybe? Inflation was transitory, but that it took 3 or 4 years. Don't you think it's possible in this same scenario we could say, well, it's transitory, it's only 4 years?
Absolutely. Look, transitory does not mean temporary, or at least that's not the intention of the word. I think lately our society just colloquially has turned it into the meaning temporary. But when I hear transitory, I think something's in transition. Like you're in transit, right? It's just my belief of it. And we are in a transition. We don't know exactly how long it's going to last, but we don't see the underlying price increases as things that don't have a reason. You know, it's not like used car prices are going up just because. They're going up because of a lot of the shortages we have for new cars, leading to a lot more, you know, that demand carrying over to used cars so people can actually get a different car. And so I really do think that there's a high probability the Federal Reserve will end up being right. And I hope so, because I think that'll be the best case scenario. Because if the Fed is wrong, it's going to create a recession. People are going to panic. And this is what happened in 1949. You know, the Fed was worried about 8% inflation, 46. I think it was like 14% in 47, 8% in 48. And then they abruptly tightened monetary policy so tightly, they actually created deflation and a recession. So now all of a sudden, they crashed the market.
So do you think that the response that we had in 2020 was appropriate, or do you think that was an over-tightening, or I'm sorry, overcorrection, or like we overstimulated the market, therefore we're going to have to pay for it for with an overcorrection?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'm,
you know,
I'm reading supply chain issues from like even people. I just saw an article a week ago from CNBC saying that there's like top executives from European blue chip stocks talking about supply chain issues are going to be in for at least for a while. For a long time, definitely not until the middle of next year, like we're predicting that it would probably ease off. But I don't know. I feel like that's a huge inflationary pressure.
Well, I do. But see, without all of that printing, I mean, whether or not we printed too much, I mean, neither here nor there at this point. But from what we did, had we not stimulated the economy, we would have had a very bad recession thanks to COVID. Had the Fed not bailed out bonds and backstopped credit markets, this could have been worse than 2008. I mean, the housing market would have crashed. Everything would have been a complete disaster. So I think the risk was much greater to the downside, and we would have been in a horrible deflationary recession for very long, years. So I think if anything, it's better to potentially overstimulate and then just move through the stimulus or sort of the inflation that we're seeing now, compared to what could have been. But now if the Fed overreacts too quickly and pulls the rug out because they think they were wrong, then I think that's worst case scenario for the market. I mean, yields will skyrocket, stocks will crash, real estate will be in instant pain. It'll be bad.
And just for people watching, when you say overcorrect, you just mean raise interest rates to like some ridiculous amount.
So overreact, in my opinion, would be all of a sudden say, that's it. We're not tapering anymore. We're done. We're just done buying bonds. We finished. No more stimulus. And instead, we're just raising rates today. And some sort of like emergency response like that comes out of the blue in an unexpected path. And that is not previously announced because they've been priding themselves on proper communication and being very upfront with when things are happening. And if they come out of the woodwork with or something totally out of left field like that, without proper expectations set for the market, we're going to have a crash. And it'll be a big, ugly crash because now not only was the Fed wrong, but now you've hurt confidence in the Fed ever being right again, which is really bad too, right? Now, a lot of people don't trust the Fed. A lot of people are already like, oh, I don't trust the Fed. But it's still a 50-50 debate. You know, if the Fed admits they were wrong and they pull the rug, now 100% of people believe the Fed sucks.
I don't know about you guys, but I don't think the Fed would ever do that. Like, they would never admit, like, okay, guys, we're wrong. I think it's in their best interest to keep us believing that everything's under control, which is what some people think is maybe part of the problem. Like, we're underreporting inflation. And maybe it's, you know, we're trying to just be like, all right, chill, everyone. Everything's great. Everything's going under control. I just don't see them being like, well, we give up. No more buying. Interest rates, die. Like, that's, I just don't see that happen.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with that is if the Fed, and it's entirely possible, but if the Fed doesn't react, if inflation proves not to be transitory, then you also potentially create too much of a risk to the other side, where now you create this potential risk of runaway inflation or hyperinflation, which is actually very difficult to bring under control. You know, the last thing you want to see is interest rates have to get jacked up to 8-9% or something, because now you create the opposite type of recession. This is a horrible disaster as well. Very painful. This happened in the 80s, right? Paul Volcker, very, very, very painful process. So you don't want to go to any extreme in this. And the Fed lying, which I know a lot of people believe the Fed is full of crap. I get it. But the Fed doing that would make things a lot worse down the road.
Right. Well, you said that yields would someday go negative. I think this decade, right? How does this play?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
How does this play into this scenario ultimately? Like,
I don't
why
think
do
it makes a difference. I think this is all a road bump. I think this pandemic was a road bump where we had a period of deflation at the beginning of the pandemic. We overstimulated to correct it. Now we've created these massive issues with shipping and supply. we will go through this, albeit painful, period of inflation for a year, 2 years, and then we'll have had our period of down, our period of up, and then we'll be back to some form of a normalized level of inflation again. Much like we saw in the 1950s. Remember, this has historical precedent, right? We saw after World War II, we saw really high inflation, 46, 47, 48. Fed overreacted. You see deflation at 49. What did you have for the next like 15 years thereafter? 1.2 to 1.5% inflation. Next to nothing for 15 freaking years until, guess what? The government effed it up with price controls.
Yeah, and if you look at the 70s, man, stagflation. That was a whole scenario. If no one's ever done a little study on stagflation in the 70s, that was something. But I mean, my personal view is I always view this whole thing, stock market, real estate market, it's all driven by people that make 40 to 80K. Those are all the ones that are buying the iPhones. Those are all the ones that are buying the cars. That's who drives this whole ship, right? And so I think you're going to have to look at personal savings rates, right, which we've seen trending down tremendously. You're going to have to look at money velocity, which is in the dumper. And the wealth effect, which you touched on, Kevin, that can go away in a snap of a fingers. I mean, yes. If you go, you're going into 2007, right? If you own real estate, man, did you have a wealth effect? By 2009, you had no real estate because you probably lost it all, right? And so I just think the wealth effect can go away in a snap of a fingers. And I think the only thing I ever worry about for the stock market and the real estate market is people that make $40,000, $80,000 a year, because they drive this whole thing. And if those folks aren't out there spending, companies' earnings tank, layoffs happen, and you get in this vicious cycle where it just gets worse and worse and worse. And if things are extremely expensive, needs-based things for these folks, right? You have less money to go out there and spend at places, or you have to take out high interest debt, right, to go buy that thing. And so this is a factor I think we have to think about and consider. And I think this is why over the next year, you'll be able to understand where the stock market goes, where company earnings go, by just looking at the middle class, in my opinion, of this country. And the state of the middle class or not the state, I just don't think the state of the middle class is nearly as strong as some people believe right now. So that's my two cents. Graham, Andre, you guys got anything? I know Kevin and I did a lot of talking as far as this goes with your guys' two cents.
What do you consider middle class? Because I think that's important because are we talking about people making less than 40,000, which would be low, right?
No, 40,000 to 80,000 a year. That's the core, what I consider, 40,000 to 80,000.
I would almost probably go up to 150 or like 180, because I think in high cost of living areas, like a lot of the coastal cities, even 180 after tax and after expenses, that's the equivalent of like 70K in a lot of spots in America.
I think that's a very small segment though, Graham. I really think about it as 40,000 to 80,000 being that true middle class of terms of each person making. So a family making 80 to let's say up to maybe 160. That to me, that's always been kind of the true middle class. So, but yeah, I would love to hear your guys' take if you have any thoughts around that in the state of the middle class.
I don't know. I would say, I don't know. To me, middle class is probably, again, depending on location, we'll just say 180 and under, just overall across most areas, at least for me. I don't know. I tend to agree that we'll probably see things pretty high for another 2 years or so. It's just these supply chain issues. I think that's all it is. If this gets ironed out and more materials get built, it's going to bring down prices. I don't think inflation could stay this high forever. My biggest concern is an overreaction from the Fed, is that they feel the pressure to have to make a sudden adjustment, and that throws things off balance. That I would say is probably the biggest risk.
I agree. Andre, do you have anything to add there? And by the way, I just want to make a quick point here. In terms of here's the scary part, right? Is if we end up in a situation where, you know, the middle class is being eaten away by inflation, and let's say folks start actually losing jobs and we actually start ending up in like this cycle where we go through a recession, then we're going to have a debate, right, about should we do stimulus checks again, right? And should we start a stimulus program? But the difference is this time is we're not going to have a once in 100-year health event. So now it's going to be like, okay, we're either going to go full socialism here, or we're just going to, you know, eat this. And I think that's going to be a big debate. And then on top of that, you're going to have this scenario where it's like, okay, let's say we do stimulus checks. Who's to say we're not going to end up in the same place we're at right now? It's going to be a short kind of like, you know, drinking some caffeine. And then it's just going to come right back and we're going to end up in our same situation and maybe even worse. So I don't know. It's some food for thought.
I will say, I don't think that people are going to lose their jobs. I think if anything, it's the opposite. It's never been easier to get a job right now.
That's right now.
With all of this labor shortage, right? But there's so many factors that are playing into like this inflation, whether it's supply chain issues, which who knows when those are going to get fixed, to, you know, labor shortage, which is getting people to compete for less people to work for them, which drives prices higher because people have to pass on the cost, just like Graham has to do with his coffee. Like there's just so many things that's going on. And I guess we won't know for sure until later. But if anything, I feel like right now it's never been easier to get a job and people are quitting their job at a record pace. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, we can't forget how fast things can change, right? You know, 2006, it was really dang easy to get a job. 2008, it was impossible. So things can switch really, really quick in this game. And I think we should never, ever forget that. And Graham has to, let's say Graham raises price on his coffee and his consumers are already getting squeezed. And so not as many people buy his coffee. And the next thing you know, all of a sudden Graham has to lay off a worker because it's like, man, we're not moving the same amount of coffee we used to move. So now, you know, hey, you're gone in 2022. So I don't know, man.
That's a good point. We won't know for sure, I guess, until I don't know. When do you guys think that we'll have a more clear picture of like when we'll maybe know the trend?
Yeah, for me, I think it's the whole year. I think you got to keep an eye out the whole year of 2022. I think it's the year for me, at least, it's the year of the middle class. Keep an eye on the middle class in 2022. I think whatever the Fed does, this and that, I think that's all a sideshow. I think it's really about the middle class in 22 and the state of them. And if inflation gets worse, I mean, guys, I just don't know, you know, how we pull out of that situation unless magically all the people in the middle class get a 20% raise. You know what I mean?
You think there's going to be just a breaking point at which inflation just becomes so detrimental that people just start losing jobs because companies aren't making money because people aren't buying the stuff.
It's certainly a possibility. I don't want to make that prediction, but it's absolutely, I think, the most important factor to watch. So, right. Kevin, I know I'm talking a little doomsday scenario here, and I think that's sometimes worth talking. I mean, do you think this is a possibility? Do you think it's like, not really, like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't want to say that the middle class is not important. That's I don't think any of us have a debate about that. You're totally right. The middle class is very, very important. But I think it's easy to feed into this narrative that inflation, that's it. This is the end. We're going to keep seeing this inflation. It's going to keep going forever because it's what's happening now. What we're feeling now always feels like it's going to last a lot longer. I mean, I just got a ranting, essentially. Well, I get messages like this all the time, but people hear me talk about this. And for example, here's somebody send me a tweet message. Bro, you sound like CNBC trying to justify inflation on millennial money. And it's like, I don't really care what other people think. I invest in what I believe in. And if I believe that inflation is going to go down next year, I'm going to sell my crypto before that. And I'm going to be long on tech stocks and growth stocks. If I think there's risk, then I'll hedge myself more with real estate, which I probably will do anyway, because I like buying real estate because I can buy it below market value. But do I believe that, you know, the consumer all of a sudden is going to turn around and decide, you know what, that's it. Coffee's just gotten too expensive. We're not buying anymore. No, I don't think that's going to happen. I think I think prices will come down a little bit and they'll slowly come down and we'll go back to a relatively normal market.
Kevin, I just want to be clear. I think I saw Graham typing on his computer right before you read that tweet there. Okay. So, you know, I don't know, but I'm just going to put that out there. So, But anywho, so what's the top five altcoins I can buy, Andre?
Oh my God.
Don't answer that.
VGX? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, VGX. VGX. Yeah. Oh my goodness. So, no, seriously, any stocks you guys are buying out there? I know we talk about Bitcoin, Ethereum. You guys are buyers. Any stocks, Graham, Andre, Kevin, what moves you making?
I'm actually considering TTCF based on your video, but I don't know, man. And then Kevin made some great points about just the raising of the marketing budget, and it's just like the profit margins are shrinking. Is that temporary? Is that long? I don't know, man. I'm kind of on the edge there.
You need to know about Tattooed Chef. And Jeremy, you agree with me. You agree it's all about the revenue, right?
Yes, revenue.
It's all about the revenue. Okay, Tattooed Chef cuts revenue forecast by about 10% for the fiscal year of 2021. There you go. That's all you need to know.
Oh my God, he's peaced out.
All right, so he's out now. All right, I'm kidding.
So I don't know. I mean, I got a stock, but I'll let you guys talk first about this. You can respond, Jeremy.
Yeah. Now I haven't bought anything. The S&P 500. I've been watching Fisker, so I'm really happy that my stock pick there when it was like $13. I think it's like $22 now. I'm not adding to that position, but that's been fun to watch.
Let's buy Graham's. What was the EV that you bought that's down like 80%? What's it called?
Lordstown Motors. Just ride.
Just save Graham. Just buy the dip.
Oh, man. No, that stock's so beyond. Oh, wow. Look at this. Fisker's at $24, and it's up another 2% after hours.
Wow.
I mean, that honestly, if I see Fisker going to like 35, 40, I'd be so tempted just to sell it. I mean, because I don't know. It seems to be balancing within a range, and I don't know how you could justify that price, but we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. $30 and it starts becoming really tempting for me to let this one go.
All I know is we're dropping to the line. We're going to 58. We're approaching and approaching.
Whoa. Right during the stream, huh, Kevin?
Yeah, it's falling right now. That was the 1 hour chart. This is the 1 minute right here, and just the last like 20 minutes.
What is that purple line? What's the support line there?
Oh, 58,000.
Yeah. The bottom one, the lowest.
Okay, this is 58.71.
Got it. There you go.
Yeah. But I've been researching quite a few stocks, and you know, one that I think is really, and I don't own any of it, but one I feel like an investor like Jeremy would like, and that's not a diss, it's actually a compliment, because you like different types of companies, and that's fine. Embraer, the thing is a manufacturer of commercial and private jet aircraft. They have built one of their subsidiary does eVTOLs, Embraer X. The ticker's ERJ. And what's really interesting is when you look at the financial analysis of the thing, it's got a forward PE of next year of like, I think it's 9. And if you go out to 2025, the forward PE is like 2. It's so like bad in terms of like how low it is, but the company's booked out with sales through 2020, like quarter one 2023. Business jet aircraft sales are booming right now, and they're expected to continue to boom, which is really great because it balances out a slowdown in commercial sales. And if they're already, you know, putting together plans, mostly probably plans and research now for hydrogen and electrified aircraft in the future. So I don't know. That one I think is a sleeper. And so I've kind of been digging around on that one. So maybe if people see anything wrong with it, leave a comment.
All right.
Kevin, how far is it off its 52-week high for that one?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I don't – that's a very good question. 50 – I don't think it's
– because I don't consider a stock unless it's down at least 70%. And you could have just said it, Kevin. I like falling knives, and my hands usually get sliced.
No, you got to be the ninja, man. You catch that stuff. We'll go. So since the pandemic, it's obviously recovered since the pandemic. Its recent high was 1940, and right now it's 1563. So it looks like it's about 19.5% off of its recent high.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's interesting to me. I like it. It's now it's an industrial play. It's probably a slower growth. I mean, these companies are very capital intensive. You know, building planes is very, very slow.
Yeah.
You take orders and deposits today, it takes 18 months to turn them around. It's very hard to build a new factory and just start building new jets. You know, it's a Brazilian company, so you're dealing with inflation in Brazil.
Thanks for bringing that one to our attention, Kevin. What about any infrastructure plays? Caterpillar, John Deere, you guys playing anything like that with the big infrastructure plan? Nothing? Okay.
I'm not.
I didn't think that was up your guys' alley there. So, but hey, by the way, Kevin, one quick question. Infrastructure bill. I have a friend, he keeps trying to claim that only 1/10 of the infrastructure bill is going toward roads, bridges, things like that. Is that accurate? I don't read through these bills. I figured you might know.
Okay,
well, just giving me some propaganda. You know,
so this is a Donald Trump quote about the $3.5 trillion social infrastructure plan. It's about the social infrastructure one. This has nothing to do with the bipartisan infrastructure plan. It was a quote made popular by Donald Trump, and it's you know, it's designed to you know, promote Donald Trump fans. But look, let's be real. The bipartisan infrastructure plan. I've actually got a full summary of it. We're not going to go through the whole thing, but I have a full. I actually have the summary of it right here. They're spending $110 billion on funding for roads, bridges, $39 for public transit, $66 for rail. And so when you add it all together, it's all going to forms of infrastructure. I suppose if it's a trillion-dollar package, $1 trillion to $1.2 trillion, I suppose maybe you could say $1 in $10 here are going for actually roads and bridges, but that's because other things are going, like here, highway safety, electric chargers, ports and airports. Cyber, climate infrastructure, broadband, clean water, the grid, pollution, you know, they're repurposing money, whatever. Like, it's all there. I mean, just look at the outline of it, and then you'll know, and you won't get misled by quotes and stuff like that you hear.
Thank you, Kevin. I figured that was probably the case based upon this gentleman's particular party. So thank you for that, Kevin. And I like how you just casually, you're like, oh, I just have it here. Like, here's the breakdown for it. So I figured you might. I appreciate that, sir. So thank you for that. And it looks
Andres
like
Andres did a magic trick, by the way. He disappeared.
Bitcoin fell so much. He's like, I'm out. I got to go buy it, guys. I don't have time for this. So. Anyways, Graham, you want to take us home? We might have to take us home with no Andre, unfortunately.
I think we're good. Guys, before you leave, just make sure to subscribe. That's all we ask for in return. That's it. Just hit the little subscribe button. It's totally free to do. Hit the like button in memory of the dislike button, which is no longer really in effect. So hit the like button now. That's the best option. Make sure to check out the links down below in the description. Also, if you want to work with us, we put our email address down below in the description. So if you want to be a part of that, the link is
signing
down below. Yes, we are, Andre. All right. With that said, you guys, thank you so much. And until next week.
Peace.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication.
So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.